Your need to know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. A deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Thank you for joining me for What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. I am happy to be back with you after a trip to New Orleans. It was a group celebration for the birthday of one of my longtime friends from the youth performing arts school years back in Louisville, Kentucky. And the first bar I went to, I spotted an I Closed Wolski's bumper sticker. I'm like, you just can't get away from the Milwaukee influence. But that was very comforting. It was a place called, literally, The Little Bar. And Ulysses, the bartender, also a heavy metal singer, made a tasty margarita. He told me a lot of Wisconsin folks go to The Little Bar in New Orleans, and that's where he got the I Closed Wolski's sticker. I also saw a guy on Bourbon Street wearing a new Brewers City Connect, one of those Wisco shirts with the Sunset Palette Barrel Man on the back. I got very excited. I ran up after him. I was like, you have one of the new shirts. So there were Milwaukee moments, even in the Big Easy. But I am back, ready to have a fun-filled 2 hours together. We're going all in on the Milwaukee creative scene. At 6:35, Milwaukee music legend Pat McCurdy joins me with a preview of the new documentary, Bright, Beautiful World, The Infectious Joy of Pat McCurdy. It has its world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival this weekend. Plus, I think I can persuade Pat to perform one of his songs live for the song you need to hear. At 7:05, I am honored and excited that Milwaukee artist and poet Dasha Kelly is in the WTMJ studio with a preview of her creative and thought-provoking new documentary called Makin' Cake, which will also get its world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival starting tomorrow, and get to know all about one of the biggest gaming weekends of the year, the 25th annual Milwaukee Gaming Classic at the Baird Center. Dan Lucen, the founder, is going to join me with stories from the decades and what is new this year, and two spotlight interviews, first with Bridges Library's Angela Meyer about their meaningful library memory project, and a spotlight interview with St. Kate the Arts Hotel's Hannah Brown. She has your invitation to their Kentucky Derby Day party at St. Kate. So hang out with me here. I do want to start by remembering David Fantle, a name that you have heard. He's been a guest here a couple times on What's on Tap. You have him to thank for the bronze Fonz. It was his brainchild to have that sculpture on the Riverwalk. And he did a presentation at the podium at Henry Winkler's 80th birthday celebration at the bronze Fonz last year. Telling that story, you can find that on YouTube. Unfortunately, David Fantle passed away earlier this week at the age of 66, unexpectedly, of a heart attack. And in doing research, Marquette Wire had a good just summary of his career. He's been an adjunct professor at Marquette since 2009 and teaching all kinds of classes on media writing and film and pop culture. And before that, spent 4 decades in marketing and communications. Was at Visit Milwaukee, the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, also United Performing Arts Fund. He really has made an impact on our creative community here and has spent a lot of time sharing his deep knowledge of the golden age of Hollywood. He was a really big fan of that genre of entertainment, and he has co-authored a book called Hollywood Heyday, 75 Candid Interviews with Golden Age Legends, and that was published about 10 years ago. And Lucille Ball, Bob Hope, Debbie Reynolds, George Burns, he and his co-author Tom Johnson personally met every person they included in the book, and he really had initiative. This is a story that he shared with me on What's on Tap from his teenage years and getting into the preservation of historic Hollywood film stories.
We had this preposterous idea right after we graduated high school that so many of these golden age stars were in their golden years, but they were still very much with us, that we thought, let's do a snail mail writing campaign to Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. Lo and behold, in late spring of 1978, we got green-lit letters to meet the screen legends Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. We were 18 years old. We hopped on a plane.
I would, too. That's incredible.
We had these amazing visits with Fred Astaire, the legendary dancers, and Gene Kelly. It was like our Willy Wonka golden ticket.
It's a life well lived. He is David Fantle. Look up his books, including the one on the film Summer Stock called Come On, Get Happy, The Making of Summer Stock. And you can find his podcast appearances, including right here on What's on Tap last January and last July. Look him up. What a legacy of knowledge that he has left us. And Dave Hanekin of Marquette University, I saw on LinkedIn, he finished his tribute to David Fantle with, Say hi to Bob Hope and Gene Kelly for us. So remembering David Fantel, and if you're a fan or a friend or family member, my condolences to you. And in lieu of flowers, they're asking for memorial gifts made in David's honor to the Nathan and Esther Pelz Holocaust Education Resource Center and also Marquette University's Diedrich College of Communication, things that were important to him. Remembering David Fantel and the wealth of cultural knowledge that he shared with us. Next, our spotlight interview with Angela Myers of the Memory Project of Bridges Library System. Find out what resources and services your Milwaukee, Waukesha, and Jefferson County libraries have to offer. Some really meaningful, useful services, and some you can even access from the comfort of your own home. GetYourLibraryCard.org is the website. And the spotlight interview with Angela Myers next on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Welcome to this spotlight interview with Bridges Library System and Angela Meyer. Angela, I'm so glad you are here. You have such, I mean, we all know about books. As soon as you say library, you know books.
Yes.
You know you can check those out. But there are so many great services. You're technically the coordinator of youth and inclusive services at Bridges Library System. And tell me about the Library Memory Project.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me today. And the Library Memory Project is an initiative of the Bridges Library System, and it consists of 17 libraries across Waukesha and Jefferson counties that offer memory cafes for people living with memory loss as well as their care partners.
A memory cafe.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is a memory cafe?
Sure. So memory cafes actually started in the Netherlands in the late 1990s, and they were actually called the Alzheimer's cafes. Over time, they've come to the United States, and we call them memory cafes here. And they're really a social outing for people to get out of the house, have fun with other people that might be going through a similar situation. We host ours at the library primarily. And it's really just a fun social time to get together with other people.
So it's for anyone, caregivers yes. or people starting to experience memory loss or fully in Alzheimer's and diagnosed?
Correct. So it's for people who, you know, are concerned about their memory. Maybe they have a memory loss diagnosis from their provider. We encourage family and close friends to come with their loved one because it's really a shared experience.
Yeah, I would say especially for caretakers mm-hmm. to also be able to, support each other, because no one wants to feel like a burden, and everybody wants to feel helpful. So to be able to exchange those stories and build that social circle, and I think that's a great, great idea. What happens at a typical memory cafe? Is it just kind of sitting around and socializing, or are there more organized activities?
I would say it's loosely structured.
Yeah.
So they're about an hour and a half long, and we allow people to come in and kind of, you know, get a name tag, sit down with other people. Sometimes we have, you know, an icebreaker. We have fidgets on the table and puzzles and simple word searches kind of to ease that anxiety as you're coming into maybe a new space for you. We usually do an activity that lasts between 30 and 45 minutes, and they really vary. Last week, I went to one on flower arranging, and Ooh. That was amazing. We all got to take home a floral bouquet, and it was led by Welke's Floral out of Elm Grove. So that was just amazing. So you'll get a variety of different activities, whether it's music or learning about animals or, you know, just kind of creating a new art project.
That's great because I guess I just figured, okay, we'll talk. Maybe mm-hmm. we'll talk about books, you know, but,
yeah.
but to know that you're actually doing a creative activity and
yes.
especially hearing how impactful music can be mm-hmm. for people with memory loss and those types of challenges. And are all the memory cafes, are they the same or they have different characteristics? Can you kind of shop around and go, this one?
Yes. We have 5 opportunities per month that people can go to. And I say come to as many as you can fit on your bingo card, basically.
Well, yeah, that's 17 different libraries.
Yes, yes.
That's
and so they
variety.
Take turns offering them. So 1 month it might be at the Brookfield Public Library, and then the next month it'll be over at the Menominee Falls Library. And people typically move from location to location. Library that is a little bit more unique is Waukesha Public Library, and they do host a memory cafe every single month.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm charmed by this idea. When I found out you and I were going to talk about this, Angela, I'm really excited because this seems like such a meaningful and useful service that I think a lot of people with a library card wouldn't have thought of. that they could get this at the Bridges Library System. But what do you hear from people who are actually participating in the memory cafes?
They absolutely love it. People tell us that they often only get out of the house to go to doctor's appointments. And so this is one outing that they really look forward to. And I can tell you that we've only had to cancel a handful of memory cafes in the 11 years that we've had them due to weather or the pandemic. So for the most part, we always hold these memory cafes because people truly look forward to them, because this is where they are meeting new friends, making connections, and really just being a part of the community.
I hadn't thought of that, that when you are getting more isolated and maybe self-conscious about knowing that you're getting memory loss, that you aren't going out as much and you are just going to the doctor. So to have this to be an activity that you're looking forward to, that's a service in itself.
Yes. And we also have our Aging and Disability Resource Center representatives there. They're our dementia care specialists. And they come to nearly every memory cafe to offer support and resources to the people who are attending. So people don't even have to pick up a phone to make a call to the ADRC to find out what resources are available. They can literally walk up to that specialist and say, hey, my mom's having trouble with this, and get the answer.
And it's absolutely free.
Yes, every single one of these cafes are free.
So how can someone attend a memory cafe?
The easiest way to find our schedule is on our website, which is librarymemoryproject.org. Go ahead and view the schedule there. You're more than welcome to come to a memory cafe to check it out as a caregiver if you want to just see if maybe this might be a fit for your loved one. We encourage you to attend and just kind of check it out. And then, of course, bring your loved one.
Thanks for being so welcoming. Because I do think that's also a hurdle. It's like, oh, I don't know. Will I stand out? Will they try and make me sit down and do something? You're just like, oh, no, you're checking it out. Just come on in.
Yep. Yep.
That is wonderful. LibraryMemoryProject.org. And Bridges Library System, Jefferson and Waukesha counties, do you have to be a resident to participate?
No, you don't. We welcome everybody to come in. We have people from all over coming to our memory cafes because they're a unique offering and people are craving this social interaction.
I would say this is obviously a need that you identified and it's successful and people keep coming.
Yes.
She is Angela Meyer. She is the coordinator of youth and inclusive services at Bridges Library System. Thank you so much. And one more time, the best way to get involved with the Library Memory Project, that website
is librarymemoryproject.org.
Thank you so much for all that you do for our community.
Thank you.
And next Spotlight interview, May is almost here. That first Saturday in May, it's a reason to party at St. Kate the Arts Hotel. Get down in Derby. Your invitation to the Kentucky Derby Party at St. Kate. How you can sip mint juleps and win prizes. Next on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
That is a sound that makes me homesick this time of year. I'm Sandy Max on What's on Tap with a Spotlight interview highlighting and celebrating the Kentucky Derby, the first Saturday in May, always the Kentucky Derby. And we're going to celebrate here in Milwaukee, St. Kate the Arts Hotel. Hannah Brown is here with your personal invitation to the Kentucky Derby Day Party at St. Kate the Arts Hotel. And Hannah, I must compliment your fascinator.
Thank you. My best friend Becky makes one for me every single year. So it's different every year, and she's incredibly creative, and I feel like she should go into business.
Oh, I feel like she should certainly be there.
She makes them for herself, and it's very fun.
It's great to have a milliner as a friend, and that she takes this. But I love that your friend Becky takes the fashion of the Kentucky Derby so seriously, because this really is part of the tradition. Even if you don't know anything about horse racing, like, this is part of it. I brought my purple big brimmed hat, but
it looks great.
It doesn't look great because unfortunately my headphones are too big and my feather needs to go on the side, not smack dab in the middle.
Next time, a fascinator.
But tell us about what you have planned for the Kentucky Derby Party, because fashion is part of the gathering.
It's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal. So we celebrate the Kentucky Derby every year at St. Kate. It is one of the most fun, or the most fun, events that we have in our lobby bar. And the party starts at 1 p.m. It goes until after the race. The race is at 5:57, and it is the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. But throughout the whole day, we have drink specials, plenty of mint juleps, raffles every 30 minutes. We have a live band. Frogwater is going to be playing at 2 p.m. There's a bugler that bugles before every raffle, which is so much fun. We have lots of big screen TVs, tons of swag. We are sponsored by Woodford Reserve, which is really awesome, which is sponsors the Kentucky Derby as well. We have their brand ambassador going through tasting stations. We have step and repeats for pictures, and it's just always a really, really fun event.
I would say it is fun to get dressed for the occasion. You've got your golden flowered fascinator on. There will be other hats and fashion. You actually have the competition.
We do. So after the race, we always have a best dressed, a best hat runner-up, and then the best hat. So we decide by crowd applause, which is always really fun. And then there's some really awesome prizes involved with that, whether it's a dinner in our studio restaurant or something like that.
So. I always think, for the times that I've gone to the actual Kentucky Derby growing up in Louisville, I always get the general admission ticket and just walk around the outside. And I'm always marveling at the high heels and the hats and the dresses.
Yeah, people come dressed to impress.
Seersucker suits. Yes, I mean, it really is a vibe to embrace spring, even if you didn't grow up in Louisville, Kentucky. This is one of those rites of spring.
Awesome.
And Woodford Reserve is good. It's the right way to have a mint julep.
It's a great spirit. And then at some of our tasting stations, not only are we just having Woodford Reserve, but we have Woodford Rye, Woodford Wheat, and Double Oaked, and like the brand ambassador walks you through each, and it's really cool to have all that.
And I like that I see that each mint julep gets you a raffle ticket for more prizes.
Yes, and that's the half an hour raffle. Every time you order a mint julep, you get an entry into the raffles, and it's Woodford swag and other things.
Fun souvenirs. But if you go, it's fun souvenirs. And I have to laugh. You can't have the trumpeter do the call to the post every time everyone orders a mint julep.
No.
That would just be too much.
That'd be awesome. We wouldn't need a band then.
But I love that you have the true live music to supplement this southern feel.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's a total vibe.
I love the touch of the trumpeter. That is warming my heart. Mm-hmm. That is great for the Run for the Roses. And you talk about this being an annual tradition. And I've, met your mixologists, and for them to take a mint julep seriously and make it properly with crushed ice.
It's important. And we do.
And the mint, and you got to slap the mint a little bit to make it proper. What has been some of your favorite memories from the past derby parties?
The outfits, and honestly, just how everybody's so engaged with the race, and it's just so exciting, and it's a build up all day long. It's a big party, and then it's 2 minutes, and everybody is just on the edge of their seats.
Yeah,
and it's really fun.
It is as exciting, and what I love even more. We're talking about how fancy and fun and the gourmet cocktails and official mint juleps and frog water. This is a free event.
Yes, it is. It is.
That is.
We want everybody to join.
That is great. Yeah. And you've got enough space in the lobby bar at St. Kate for everybody to really enjoy, spread out, even when it gets busy. That can handle a lot of people and without crushing your big hat.
Right. And we also have additional seating next to our lobby bar with a satellite bar and other TVs, so everybody can spread out if you need to, or dance,
Hannah Brown, hostess with the mostest with her fascinator. She's challenging you to beat her fascinator tell Becky to start making fascinators for everyone. Hannah Brown with your official invitation to the Kentucky Derby Day Party at St. Kate. What's the best way for people to make plans to join you?
So we have tickets on Tock, and the tickets aren't paid for, but it will show that you're going. It kind of reserves the space for you. It is free, but it just kind of, shows that you're attending. So there's information on Tock. There's also information on our website.
SaintKateArts.com.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hannah Brown with her fascinator.
Thank you very much.
You can see it on our YouTube live stream. And stay with me here because we are going to get even more lively and fun. The Milwaukee music legend who has a documentary about him world premiering at the Milwaukee Film Festival this weekend, Pat McCurdy, joins me on What's on Tap next. First, we check in for the latest news from the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Here's Jessica Gatzo.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. Handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. I am over the moon to have in the studio with me one of the most fun, creative, connective musicians in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, I dare say the world, Pat McCurdy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How are you?
What an intro. How can I follow that up?
Well, you create a documentary all about you.
Yeah. I had nothing to do. I let the creative people be creative. Somebody else did all that work. So. Well,
Bright, Beautiful World, The Infectious Joy of Pat McCurdy.
It's infectious. I don't know if I like the sound of that.
You do.
Yeah.
You do, because people must do this to you all the time. I've got to tell you. I have to tell you the first time I saw Pat McCurdy.
Okay.
But I mean, has this happened to you constantly?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah. So
I'm responsible for hundreds of children because so many people come up to me every year and say, well, I took my wife or my husband for our first date to one of your shows thinking if they like it, then I might like them. There might be a future here. We might have, you know.
Yeah.
And then they get married, then they have kids, or people that have met at my show. Think of how many people probably met at Summerfest when there were thousands of people in the audience at the comedy stage. They get married. They have kids. Who's responsible? I'm like the godfather of hundreds of children.
You were the foreplay for so many people.
I think so.
Foreplay and guitar for people.
Uh-huh.
It is.
And it's because they're happy.
And I love
the infectious joy.
It's the litmus test, though, that if you take a date, they have a sense of humor. They'll cut loose. They'll sing along. They'll have a good time.
Absolutely.
You don't want somebody who's a fuddy-duddy who's like, I'm not going to clap my hands. Don't look at me.
And I have also heard, well, I went out with this guy, but he didn't like your show. So I didn't think there was a future for us.
Didn't make the cut. Well, I love that some of this infectious joy is now being captured on film, and we can all see it at the Milwaukee Film Festival this weekend. Bright, Beautiful World. So you inspired some of the title.
Yeah. Well, that's one of my CDs.
And that's what I mean. Yeah. So it's like you had a little something to do with this, but this is the blurb. Over more than 50 years. Is that accurate?
Coming up.
Well done, you. 12,000 performances in Milwaukee and beyond. I think that sounds conservative to me. Pat McCurdy has cultivated a fiercely loyal fan base and a reputation for spreading infectious joy. He may not be a household name, but to those who know him, Pat is unforgettable. Bright, Beautiful World is an uplifting portrait of an artist who found success on his own terms and of the deep decades-long love affair between a musician and the fans who keep showing up.
They do.
They keep showing up. So you have seen this film.
I have not seen this film.
You haven't seen a cut? Nothing?
I have not seen a cut.
No.
Again, let creative people be creative. I didn't want to have any that kind of input or say change that scene or cut that song. It's going to be my first time too this Saturday.
Wow. On the big screen, you'll be watching
absolutely.
It for the first time with of us.
I have traditionally not really enjoyed watching videos or interviews of, especially this one where I'm going to be young and part of it and then grow older and older. So I don't know how much I was thinking, I might go in there, watch a little bit and go, oh, look at that guy. I'll see all the mistakes and the double chin. So I had nothing to do with the actual film. And
that
I've not seen it.
That is fascinating to me that you were able to keep that much of a distance and not even have the curiosity or the temptation, but that you are going to go in clean on Saturday evening.
It's going to be a first time experience for me, just like everybody in the theater.
And that's its own magic. And honestly, the more I think about it, that's even more on brand with you experiencing something. And I hate to use the phrase on brand, but that is so much your essence, experience something all together.
I love surprises too. I hate it. My dear wife, Bethany, we both hate it when people find out the sex of their baby, because that's the last remaining surprise in the, it's a true surprise.
Other than what's in the diaper.
I like it when anything can happen. And that's why my show is traditionally, I play the same songs. I played some songs since 1991 or 1990. I don't, 6 or 7 favorites that are in every show. And you think I'd be tired of them. But something different happens every time because that's the nature of the show.
It's a different audience every time.
A different audience, a lot of improvisation. So, you know.
You're witty, you're clever, you're sharp.
That's part of the infectious joy.
It is. He is Pat McCurdy in the studio with me, sharing a sort of a preview. We'll talk about more about the process of making it. Since you haven't seen it, you can't tell us what to expect.
Oh, I can tell you all about the process.
The gritty. We'll find out about Bright, Beautiful World, the infectious joy of Pat McCurdy, world premiering at the Milwaukee Film Festival. Stay with us here on What's on Tap.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
He is Pat McCurdy live in the WTMJ studio, not only because he's a joyous individual who creates wonderful music for us to sing along to, but the subject of a documentary, Bright, Beautiful World, The Infectious Joy of Pat McCurdy, world premiering at the Milwaukee Film Festival Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, 6:30 at the Oriental Theater, and you will be there in the audience.
Absolutely.
Wide-eyed, watching yourself on the big screen for the very first time.
I'll be on the red carpet.
Oh! Is there a red carpet approach? I think there should be. There is a step and repeat in the lobby, so you should at least stand there and have a receiving line.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. People.
It's very interesting because in the early 80s, I was in a band, and this group approached us to make the very first story video ever made in Milwaukee because MTV was just starting to be hot. So a lot of guys did performance videos. They wanted to do a story video, and the Oriental was one of the locations, and it's so cheesy. We watched it years later. We were watching it with my kids, and they were 10 and 7, and they're, oh, Dad, this is so cool. Bethany and I couldn't stop laughing.
Oh.
It was so, it was like, oh, there I am. Oh, there he is. So the editing left something to be desired on that one.
But you get to go full circle now, and you get to be
exactly
back. But for those who have seen you at so many different places and spaces around Milwaukee, around Wisconsin, and the region. This is going to be fun to see your life and your performances and how you connect with people in a film.
It would be odd.
I was saying this wasn't your idea, I guess?
No. These guys, every year, this group of guys who were Madison graduates, once a year, they'd show up at one of my shows at the least expected spots. A lot of times it was at the terrace at the Union in Madison. But then another year it would be at some dive bar, and it would be five or six guys, and they were just crazy. And then one of them, Benny, asked me to play at his wedding. And we flew to La Jolla or someplace in California because he's from Colorado. And he said, we have a movie company. And we make movies. Would you ever consider having a documentary made of you and your career? And of course, my first reaction was no. It seemed like a lot of work
for you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So seemed like this is a lot of work, you know. And they were pestered Murph, and finally I said, yeah, I'll do it as long as I don't have to. I'm not going to have any hand in the story or anything.
So how long did the film crew follow you around?
I think they came and did interviews at my house. And then they did 8 or 9 shows. They were supposed to do State Fair last year. Anybody remember what happened at State Fair?
I was going to be there that last day.
The last day?
Where the monsoon came and everything flooded.
And
that
then,
in itself is part of a documentary.
Exactly.
Wow.
And then they asked me to do a curated show, a 3-camera, kind of me, like a VH1 Storytellers. And my first reaction to that was, oh, that's going to be a lot of work. and I'm used to playing my show and singing my songs, but not actually talking about myself. So I had to go back. And that's when I counted up how many solo shows I'd played. And it was, as of January 3rd of 2026, 10,169.
Wow.
Where they get that number from.
That's fantastic.
But I went all the way back. I went back to the garage growing up in Brookfield and played a little sample of the band I had. And so it was a fun night, but really emotional because it's like, boy, I've done a lot of things and met a lot of people, for all these years.
And your music inspired Benny and his buddies
and they, to make movies.
Right, and to capture your story. They see what's special because for as much fun as we all have singing along to Sex and Beer and cutting loose and having fun, you are really creating magic for millions of people now over nearly five decades, bringing people together in song, giving people their moment to come up on stage with you. These are really powerful connections. Where does that come from
in you? It is an experience. My parents used to come to shows and they'd never tell me. And they were in their 70s, late 70s, early 80s. I'd look up at Summerfest at 10:30 or 11 at night, and they'd be sitting in the middle of the crowd. And that was a high-energy crowd.
Yes.
But they could never believe that their shy kid, and probably it's compensation for being a shy kid, although the middle child, you want to show off a little bit. And this was how I was able to do it. I always say I went as far and has been as successful as the amount of talent I have. I'm not the greatest singer, not the greatest guitar player, but, I can bring people together.
You certainly do.
And it is a communal thing. And that's so few things nowadays. So
very much so. And not a spectator sport.
Right.
It's not your show. It's
something that's not sports. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. But you really are inclusive of absolutely every person there, but not in the poking fun and like, oh, come on. Yeah. Like, you're not going to heckle somebody to have fun.
No.
We're gonna just all have fun at a Pat Curry
show. I do not judge.
Well, Pat, every episode of What's on Tap, I play the song you need to hear. It's a song that I choose. It's usually something timely. Maybe a concert's been announced or something to do with a date. But since you are here in the WTMJ studio, since we are celebrating the world premiere of Bright, Beautiful. See, I'm getting thrown up. Bright, Beautiful World.
Yeah.
The Infectious Joy of Pat McCurdy, the world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival. I want you to play the song. So when we come back, we'll do the big setup and everything. But do you know what song you'll play? Or are you going to surprise us?
Yes, I'm going to play a song that's going to be in my next album.
Oh.
So it'll be not new to people who come to watch me play it, but newish. And it's going to be my my optimistic take on geopolitics.
He is Pat McCurdy. Stay with us for the song you need to hear next.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ. And now, feast your ears. This is the song you need to hear.
Most blokes are going to be playing at 10. These go to 11.
We're going to be just fine. We're going to be just fine. We're going to be just fine.
Pat McCurdy! We're going to be just fine.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's called.
Thank you so much for joining me. Everybody go see the brand new world premiere documentary of Bright, Beautiful World, The Infectious Joy of Pat McCurdy. World premiering at the Milwaukee Film Festival Saturday at 6:30.
And Sunday as well.
At the beautiful Oriental Theater.
Sunday at 11 a.m.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Stay with us on What's on Tap.
Your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max. Sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. A deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Welcome to the second hour of What's on Tap. I'm very pleased about this next hour. Where to see films from Wisconsin and around the world, and where to get your games on this weekend of all kinds. The 25th annual Midwest Gaming Classic is at the Baird Center tomorrow through Sunday. The founder, Dan Lucen, he joins me at 7:35 to share what's new, what is still a tradition there, and what is truly special about this gathering of fun lovers. But first, the world premiere of the documentary Making Cake at the Milwaukee Film Festival is happening tomorrow at the beautiful Oriental Theater, and to tell us all about it is the immensely talented, multifaceted artist, poet, so much more, and now director, producer, and writer, and subject of Making Cake, Milwaukee's own Dasha Kelly. How are you?
Astounding and astounded. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to What's on Tap, and congratulations on this latest achievement.
Thank you.
Talking about having props to show on our WTMJ YouTube live stream. Do you have your prop? Can you hold it up?
I do.
Show me.
I do. proudly. Look at this. It's a badge. Now, I've had a film festival badge before, but it's never said filmmaker on it. Congrats. And this one says filmmaker because I am one of those.
It was so fun to see you gush and have the enthusiasm and to share in your joy of this latest accomplishment. Before we talk about making cake and the process, what do you tell people making cake is about? Because it's I think it's a wonderful approach and a brilliant concept.
It is a conversation that is layered, and it's an invitation to fall into this discussion that can be sticky, it can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be painful. And anything that you do over cake, not only do you not have to count the calories, but you also are able to follow into a conversation, into an experience that just literally feeds all of our humanity.
And you have started making cake. Where did it really start? Did it start as some writings and journaling and then evolve? Or did you always think that this is a presentation?
It's always been a presentation, and it's been organic every step of the way. So I was initially invited to do a commission show at the Kohler Art Center in Sheboygan. They said, we've seen you do your thing. We've seen you talk a few times. We're ready for you to come and help us have a conversation in our community about race.
I would say, when they say do your thing, what did they think your thing was? Because you've had such an illustrious artistic creative career so far.
That was probably the best part, that they know that my thing has a lot of accessories to it. So in fact, I introduce myself these days as a creative change agent, because I have found through my work as a writer, a performer, be it poetry or fiction, creating space as a facilitator, these .../... all use creativity as a way to make a platform for unheard voices, as a way to make a container for conversations like these that seem difficult. I mean, they can be difficult, but they're not impossible. So they've seen me as a keynote speaker. They've seen me create programming that's community-based. There's a strategy and an outreach of creative placemaking, which is being really intentional about making an event that sure may seem like a festival, but the undergirdings of that festival are to bring these particular voices together or to highlight this particular outreach. So I've been doing that throughout my career. And even though the output is making art and making open mics and publishing books, yes, art has happened.
Yeah.
But there's always been really intentional in using creativity as a strategic tool to do some of these other human wellness type of things.
Well, I've always said what's beautiful about art in all of its forms is it creates connection and conversation. Sometimes that conversation is looking at a public sculpture going, wow, that's really neat. I wonder how they did that, you know, making your mind go in that way. Or sometimes it's that play messed with my head. I don't know how I feel about that. And I didn't like that character doing that, you know, and creating that conversation about sometimes very difficult or awkward issues.
Precisely.
Or complex issues, which Precisely. Is what making cake is about.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you went to Sheboygan, but I was just like, just caught my ear when you said, they said, you do your thing.
When you do your thing.
I was like, but take credit for doing your thing, because that's a lot.
I thank you for that. I received that, and I will flip my hair and take credit for doing my thing. It's been a lot of years. So all the way from beginning and going, being invited into a third grade classroom, and yes, we're doing activities and having fun games, but really this is a sociology 203 level class for 9-year-olds. You know, so we're having fun, and this is what money means. And we're going to design our own money. But in the beginning, money, we bartered. And these are other things that counted as funds. And this is how this table group is going to barter. You all have a chicken, and you have someone that can sew. And this table over here, you have cows, and you have somebody that can tutor. And watching these 9-year-olds without any other instruction figure out what bartering looks like, feels like, how it works, and why it has worked. So, yes, but in this—
And socializing in the midst of all that as well.
Absolutely. And all of this is in the space of play. All of this is in the space of creating things. So I found that even in us being in a creative environment where you're observing a performance, or you're observing an open mic, you're observing someone, like you said, doing live painting or just the finished piece, that is one half of the experience. And then the other part of my work has been putting people— in an environment where creativity is happening in front of them or by their hands. And everybody's nervous because everyone's concerned, is my thing creative enough or sparkly enough or poety enough? And then you suspend all of that comparison. Anytime that you bring creativity into the room or into a conversation, it it addresses our habits of interaction, because no one knows what's about to happen. No one can lean into how I typically would respond to, how I normally would fall into. You can't. And so everyone's nervous. Everyone's unsure. So everyone is more authentic when they fall into discussions. Absolutely.
Yeah. And like you said, taking away those expectations.
For sure.
Dasha Kelly, now filmmaker, world premiering her documentary Makin' Cake at the Milwaukee Film Festival starting tomorrow afternoon. We're going to talk more about what to expect at this world premiere tomorrow at the Oriental Theater and more about the film Makin' Cake next on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Dig, dig, right in. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Hired a band?
Well, for goodness sake, if I knew you were coming,
music
I'd have
to get you in the
cake.
Mood to see Makin' Cake, a brand new documentary that will world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival tomorrow at 1 at the Downer Theater. And
yes.
Then again on Monday?
Sunday
at the Oriental Theater. And Dasha Kelly, the creator, will be there for both of the screenings, I'm only too sure.
Absolutely.
The proud mama of this new creation. And Makin' Cake, what should we expect to see when you get your popcorn to sit down and here it comes up on the big screen?
Whew. When you sit down on the screen, first you're going to be listening for me crying in the back. That'll be me back in the corner having this emotional outburst of this incredible journey. Definitely not coming to an end, but coming to fruition on a big screen. And it'll be very different than seeing it on my laptop. So that's number one.
So it'll be the first time for you to see it on the big screen too?
Yes.
Wow, magical.
Yes, very magical indeed. And I tell a lot of stories. So one, the stage show that I've been touring, this, if I would compare the two, my stage show is a pithy social media post. And this documentary then is more of my think piece. So this is bringing in the experts and this is my research. This is the footnotes of how I came to say some of the things I say on stage, the stories that I choose to tell. And so when you sit in this theater, you're going to hear about some cake fails. You're going to hear about cake tips. You're going to hear about the history of the science of how we're able to go from taking days to bake a cake to being able to bake a cake in an afternoon. You're also going to hear stories about the fact that the ingredients for cake have also always told a story of access and privilege. So one, you had to be wealthy to be able to afford sugar. You needed to have livestock to be able to get the butter. You needed to have time to also be able to take the time to bake a cake, because before these advancements in the chemistry and the science, it took days to make a cake. So then you're now having the discussion of, well, who had these said ingredients and who had this kind of time? And so then you look at the story, the film goes into showing how it's always been this conversation of class. It's always been this disparity of haves and have nots. And then you also have another layer where you're looking at the impact of America's slave economy. So these are things where the folks that were out in these houses, in these slave quarters, weren't afforded or allowed or had the resources to even have the basic things to make a cake. And in doing the research for the show, became finding these stories in this documentary and finding these social scientists and historians and bakers to go and interview to really flush out how we got here. And the air quotes around here, it's the idea of the kitchen being the place for women. The idea of...
I hadn't even gone there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We give Betty Crocker the business. I'm just saying.
What's one of the most interesting and enlightening interviews that you did with between bakers and scientists and historians? Is there one interview in particular where you're like, wow, I learned a lot in that conversation?
I really did. I would say... they were all so good. The tie would be with talking to Dr. Doug Keel, who's a professor of history and Native American studies at Northwestern University, and having a sit down with him to have this conversation about land return, having this conversation about Native nations and their relationship to land that, as far as they're concerned, is still theirs. It is settler occupied. And the impact that the Homestead Act had and the idea of manifest destiny and things that we all learned in history. But having this discussion based on cake, that we're able to still look at how it's impacting Native nations today, how it shows up in our relationships and our conversations about this land that we're on, particularly thinking about this being America's 250th, you know, celebration. So just hearing the passion and the organization, and of course, just having a lot of dots connected. So we have, I know, I remember learning history just so in such a fragmented way. You know, you learn about this unit, then that unit, then
and
that
this country
unit.
And that country. And then, yeah, you're not really associating what was happening in Greece with China, with America at all the same time.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. So having this, that was something that really came through really powerfully in speaking with him. The second one would be my interview with Dr. Rebecca Sharpless, who is a professor at Texas Christian University. And so had a book come out about the history of baking. So like very bottom line, baking is cooking with air. And when you say it like that, oh, it sure is. And just the difficulties in baking and how every culture has always had baking as part of how it's fed itself. Once you figured out the cooking with air part, because you can, what did she say? You can roll around with a piece of bread, but you can't roll around with gruel in your pocket. So just knowing these things that are just so part of our everyday lives that we can look at, not just, again, the history ties together about how we've gotten here and why it's really so interesting. And then cake in particular, particularly her focus is on history of women's baking in the South. And so then again, you're going through what happened when we didn't have servants and slaves to make our food. What did that look like in the kitchen? What was the expectation for that new housewife? How did supermarkets come to play? When did boxed cake come into play? So interspersed in there, you have bakers across the country who are giving tips on what to do and what not to do, the cakes that give them trouble, and the things to look for when your cakes aren't doing quite right.
Dasha Kelly, this is an absolutely fascinating approach to so many. Like you said, it's multi-layered. Mm-hmm. There's a layer cake right there.
But it is
so very thoughtful and so interesting. There's more to share because I have more questions about Making Cake, Dasha Kelly's brand new documentary that will have its world premiere tomorrow afternoon at the Downer Theater and then again on Sunday at the Oriental Theater in two grand historic spaces to tell this history and these thought-provoking concepts that either weren't known or we forgot about through Making Cake. Stay with us here on What's on Tap.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Joined in the studio by Dasha Kelly. You've heard her name, artist, poet, and so much more in our Milwaukee area and beyond. And you might have even seen her perform Making Cake on stage. You performed it at the Milwaukee Rep. Where else did you perform Making Cake?
I've actually been touring it for 5 years across the country. So here within Wisconsin, I've been able to perform the show in Eau Claire, in Appleton, Green Bay, Viroqua, Madison.
I want to say Oak Creek. Add that to the list.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oak Creek and Cedarburg. Yes. So we'll be at the Marcus Center on the 7th and then again in Madison on the 14th.
So that's cool. So what about doing the presentation live of Making Cake, where you explore larger issues of society and culture and privilege through the much more approachable lens of everybody's baked a cake,
absolutely,
whether they're great in the kitchen or not. We've all baked a cake or some cookies. Like, so I feel like this is a very interesting gateway to understand history and culture. But what was it about you doing the tour that made you think this could make a great documentary?
The idea for to go from the tour to the documentary initially happened right around COVID. So looking at, it was starting to get momentum of being able to book the show. And at that point, no one knew it was going to happen. I'm watching Broadway and all these theater world places try to do these pre-recorded productions.
Yeah.
So in this moment of, as many creatives were panicking and figuring out and doing all the things to try to make sure we have things in place to, you know, to stay alive, I'm thinking, how do I keep this project going? Maybe I record the live show and that can be something that can be streamed out. And I was doing another project with PBS and I was like, hey, by the way, this thing is going on and could we maybe film the show? And they say, well, we could do that, shoulder shrug, but it's not really going to be very interesting. Oh, and they were explaining that translating live performance into a video or into a film experience doesn't always capture
and hit. Can be a little flat. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
the,
yeah.
The, no matter how great the live experience can be, watching it literally two screens removed, it would be a different experience. I said, so instead, maybe you want to think about making a documentary. And I looked at my mentor at the time, and I said, I'm not a filmmaker. And he said, well, once you make a film, then you will be. What? So the universe said we're going to embark on this journey. So really, initially, it was how to make sure I don't lose the momentum of this experience. And being able to travel with the live show, and I know it'll be the same experience with the film, it's a tool for conversation. So when I'm able to go to the theater, my conversation, you know, my performance part, it's, I'm not on stage for long, you know, like 45, 50 minutes, and I'm telling stories. I've got multimedia. There are two bakers on stage making cakes live.
Ooh.
And then the audience gets cake. The audience gets cake, and we talk about what they saw, what they heard. I haven't talked to each other. They talk back to me. And every city we've been in, there, I love the part where there's this out-of-body experience where someone is seeing themselves tell this story or ask this question or offer this contribution to a theater full of people. And because I'm a facilitator, I said, hey, I got it. No one has to have a dissertation. No one has to have it figured out. We're here, humans, eating cake together, and we're going to get to a solution. Not a solution. We're going to get to an opportunity to be sweeter tomorrow, to be more clear tomorrow. And you're going to hear something, another person's experience that you didn't walk in here with. So we all are going to leave enriched by everything that you hear. So I love that part of it because you've already, like I mentioned before, you've created this unexpected experience. No one knows what to expect when they come. Even if you've read all the things and you've seen clips, every audience is different and every experience is really unique. So the conversations that happen are so authentic and genuine. They're informative. They're real. And I love being able to create that container to have that happen time and time again. So to have them the film experience, I'm excited to see what that'll feel like.
Well, I am thrilled for you to have been given the gift creatively to now become a filmmaker and have these new creative skills in your wheelhouse of being a director, a producer, and a writer for film now that you've adapted Making Cake for the big screen. So congratulations on your new accomplishment.
Thank you. Wear your
Milwaukee Film Festival filmmaker badge proudly.
And it's my new accessory.
I'm sure we'll see you in the lobby tomorrow at the Downer Theater. Tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock is the official world premiere, and then you can see it again on Sunday. I love it. She's holding her face.
Oh,
I know
goodness.
It is. Believe it. And it's Sunday. What time at the Oriental Theater?
1 p.m.
1 o'clock and 1 o'clock. So mkefilm.org is where you can see the listing for Making Cake, Dasha Kelly. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
And now we go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Here is Jessica Gatzo.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
If that sound excites you, good news. 3 whole days of the Midwest Gaming Classic is about to take place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Baird Center. And it's a monumental celebration occasion, the silver anniversary of the Midwest Gaming Classic. To tell us about it is the founder, Dan Lucen. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Happy silver anniversary to you.
Thank you. It's been a long journey, and there's been lots of up and downs, but it's feeling great.
Should I have gotten you something? What do you get the gamer who has everything?
I don't know. I'm sure that I don't have everything, but like, you know, it's just, it's our show's a little bit different than a lot of other shows, where a lot of shows you go for the stuff, and I always tell people that you come for the people. So I'm just excited to see people. I don't need the things. Like, the games are there to do with the people, but we're there for the people. So if you can just make sure that I see all my friends, and I've already been seeing some of them, then that's what I'm here for.
Oh, that's a good, that's any good party.
Yeah.
You know, that's a wonderful approach as well, that you are gathering people who have this commonality, like to have fun.
Yeah. My argument has been for like why games are so important is that there's so much in the world that tears us apart now. And when I was a kid, I was not the most popular kid. And I would walk up sometimes. I was very shy. I'd walk up to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game and I'd put the quarter in the Donatello slot because he's the best, or at least I think so. And then anybody else that joined in, it didn't matter if they were older, younger, age, gender, ethnicity, anything, was on my team. And we could have a conversation afterwards. And I wouldn't do that with people that I just walked up to on the street or whatever. But like, if you can do that, that's magic. And so instead of posting a meme and then going and yelling at each other because that's not what I think, you can go and be like, hey, let's fight the Foot Clan together or the whatever. You know, you can let's play Scrabble together. Let's play Magic the Gathering. Let's sit down and play a game of pinball. There's a million different games that you can do that over. And that's what our show is really all about.
That's heartwarming because I think a lot of people go gaming. They either think of one very specific kind of game and they think that may not be for me or they're only going to have one room for it. But you have such a huge, I mean, the numbers are staggering, a breadth of square footage of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. What's so staggering to me is that when we started, we were in a show about the Atari Jaguar, which was a not really popular console that Atari did at the end of their life. And we had people come and say, can I share this other stuff? And we said, yeah, that sounds fun. And then every year since then, we've had people that come to us and say, can I share this? I didn't see this here. Can I share this? And we say, yes. And so like last year, right after the show, we had a group that does speed puzzling come to us. That's like puzzles done really fast.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh my God, you don't have speed puzzling. Can we do your speed puzzling? And I was like, yes, you can.
That's entertainment for me. I would watch that. I assume that it's almost like a chess match. I would think, you know, where they hit that little button.
Yeah. I'm going to learn how it works along with everybody else that's at the show. And that's part of the magic of it. So I love puzzles. I've done puzzles my whole life. I am very curious to sit down and to be like, what is this? Because maybe this is something that if I've got time, I will do in the future.
And Don, that's just so wonderful Dan, that is so wonderful that you are still discovering new games that excite you. To bring this community together, that you're not just jaded and like, eh.
Right. Well, and so it's the stories that excite me about it. It's how did you get into this? Like, how does someone think to do this? And then people will tell you. And like, again, our show is really about those connections and finding that out. So many shows, what they do is that they hire like a group that brings in most of the content and then they set it up. And that's great. Our show is like all these individuals that we manage to bring in and we set it up kind of together. And so it just feels different because you're with these people that like they don't do this regularly, but you get this like raw, unvarnished like feeling of like, oh my God, there's something to this. It's like a grassroots thing. And at the same time, we like to put on a sheen of professionalism to it. We're not just, you know, showing up and just like letting people do whatever, but like we do that. And so we work on people and we work with people to make sure that they're getting times to show off and what to share. And then we get people that come and sometimes they're people that a couple of years ago, we had a 10-year-old boy who developed a game that he wanted to share. And so we had that. And then directly beside them, we had the makers of the WWE 2K24 video game, which was like a multi-million selling game. And we put their booths directly beside each other and they were the same size. And that's not what other shows do.
That's fantastic, though, but it's also an inspiration. It must have been a real thrill for that kid to be like, hey, I'm legit. Like,
yeah.
And to be treated with respect and enthusiasm and, again, that community and just sharing in the joy.
Yeah. And what's amazing about that, too, is that when we did that, I went to the developers that were coming in. It was a sub-developer for the game. And they came in and I said, yeah, this is what I'm thinking for your booth. And they were like, we've been to your show. That is perfect. And so by them knowing and understanding, like people come to our show in a different way than what you get from regular things. And so like I've had a story from a guy who comes and he often brings games that he gives away from his company. And the reason that he founded this company is that he found out that people were making still games for old consoles at our show one year. A couple of years later, he came and he talked with people. Then the next year he came and he showed them what he had done. Then he became good friends with them. Now they're in business together. Now they're best friends. And that's why they come to our show every year. And that, again, that's kind of the magic of being able to feel like you can be part of it.
Yeah. Relationships, community building, but like you said, true relationships and being able to talk with people who are doing the same activity and have things to talk about.
Absolutely.
He is Dan Lucen, founder of the now 25th anniversary Midwest Gaming Classic. There is so much more to talk about. There are 10,000 games that are just on free play to go to the Midwest Gaming Classic. So I don't have to come with my rolls of quarters anymore.
Yeah. And kids 9 and under are free too.
Oh,
so, and Saturday and Sunday. And Friday is limited. If you don't buy Friday before tomorrow, it's probably going to sell out. But Saturday and Sunday, 9 and under kids are free.
Multi-generational. That's good. You know, dad, son, mom, daughter, all that good stuff. Or uncle and niece. Those are good times to get together and come and play. The Midwest Gaming Classic, we have more and answering your questions on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line 855-616-1620. Stay with us on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. Handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And if you love games, the place to be is the Baird Center Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or even just one day, because the Midwest Gaming Classic is back, and it's the 25th anniversary. And I've got the founder, Dan Lucen, with me. And you started this 25 years ago in a small way, just celebrating one gaming system.
Yeah, it was me. And there is one other person, Gabby, who she generally is more behind the scenes than me. And so we started it. And our whole thing was we talked to people online about the Atari Jaguar. And the idea was, you know, it would be better than talking. Let's get together and play. And so there was an event that went from city to city. And we went to it in 1999 in Minnesota, and we were like, that was so much fun. Let's offer to host it in Milwaukee. And so in 2001, we said we would host this in Milwaukee, and we were the only group that said that we would.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of got it by default. But that first year, we had about 100 people. It's funny. There's a party going on in Third Street Market Hall as like a kickoff for us right now. And I was just over there, and I was like, this party is bigger than our first show, both in quantity of people and size. But that first show, we had 100 people. Some flew in from Japan. There was people from all over the country. And it was just this feeling of like, oh, man, like this is so awesome. Let's share all this stuff together. And it's what it's continued to be ever since then.
And it's grown now. You were talking about new additions like speed puzzling. But the things that turned me on, pinball machines. Tell me you've got pinball at the Midwest Gaming Classic.
We have so much pinball at the Midwest Gaming Classic. So we work with a lot of pinball companies, and Stern Pinball is a huge supporter. They brought, I don't know the exact number, but I want to say it's 50 brand new games that they opened up in the boxes today.
Wow.
Are setting up as of when I left the center, and they will all be available for play for the first time for people starting tomorrow. Now,
I can just hear them now, Dan.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. Well, and they just released a Pokemon pinball, and they're going to have 15 of them there so that you can play with less weights for them. Spooky Pinball, which is a pinball company that started kind of because of our show. They brought a game that they kind of custom did. They met other people, and they said, we should make our own game. And now they're an actual pinball manufacturer in Benton, Wisconsin. They just did Beetlejuice. And it sold out within minutes of putting it on sale, and they have 12 of them on our show floor for people to check out. So that's really awesome. We also worked with them because we wanted to do a history of Spooky Pinball exhibit, and so we have 7 other games that they've released that you can come and play. And that's I think that there's more than 100 overall brand new pinball machines, and there's more than 100 older pinball machines that collectors bring and share individually.
And I would just have fun looking for an Addams Family pinball machine in the midst of all of that. But I think I would get all distracted by all the pinball machines that you just mentioned.
And I'm pretty certain that we're going to have one of those there. That's the most produced pinball machine ever.
Really?
And, yeah. And so it's very popular because of that. That's why people remember it so much.
The Mamushka.
And exactly. I one of my best friends is that's one of his favorite games. And so he's always like, you got to tell me if one's coming. And I saw someone register one. So I can never guarantee it until it shows up because, again, these are individual. So who knows what happens,
but Dan,
I expect it'll be there.
If I show up to the Midwest Gaming Classic and I'm disappointed that I didn't find the Addams Family pinball machine in the midst of everything else that's going on, then I'm inconsolable. Like, I'm not a fun person. I will be distracted by air hockey. Like, I'm all the vintage stuff. And then our producer, Isaac Marquardt. Isaac, you're excited about the Midwest Gaming Classic on the complete other end of things. What are some of your games, and you were excited about some of the new things?
I'm excited for everything that's going on here. It's all in my wheelhouse.
Your favorite game? What would you play when you go?
I think if we're talking video games, it's well before my time, but I do like Space Invaders quite a bit. It's a great one. And Simpsons Bowling. Also a classic for me.
I'm impressed that you just said Simpsons Bowling because that is a game that a lot of people have forgotten.
Bowling, one of my favorites of all time.
That's a good one. I mean, and that's the thing is that there's always a story. So I don't know exactly how much time we've got or how long the story is, but why?
Because when I was growing up, we would go to Sam's Pizza for birthday parties and stuff. And in their arcade in the back, Simpsons Bowling. And it was so much fun to me at 5 years old that I've never forgotten it.
And it is that sentimental connection, isn't it, Dan?
It's both that. And then, I feel like I instantly have a bond here because we can talk through a game and a history thing. And like, I could turn around and be like, you know, one of the biggest games that I had was Jurassic Park Pinball, because before Jurassic Park Pinball, I thought that pinball was all luck. And then I was actually at Summerfest and my parents went to see some show and I was like, can I just hang out here? I don't want to see this band. And they were like, sure, but we're not giving you any money. My grandpa gave me money. My parents didn't.
Loaded you up with the quarters.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, I'll just watch people play pinball because it's all luck. And I watched a guy just stay on Jurassic Park for like an hour straight. And he started talking to me and he was like, yeah, you know, you can win free games. And I was like, wait, you can do what? And
because you hear the knock with the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And once I learned that, I was like, oh man, I could save money by playing pinball and it's so fun. And I got into it. And I mean, pinball was kind of the second thing that we added. 2002 was the first year that we had pinball at the show. And it was one game. And like I said, it's now mind blowing that we're going to have 200 plus this weekend.
That's incredible. And fresh out of the box, being precariously and lovingly set up right now.
I literally just had a bunch of the Stern guys coming up to me and being like, hey, and like, it's fun because like, I know them now. And like, when I started this, it wasn't an expectation of that. And the other side of it is that you kind of just learn that, you know, people are people. If they've got a cool job, they're still just a person. And that's the other thing that our event really tries to do, is to allow you to just meet and interact with really cool people. Whether they're, we have like the guy who founded Raw Thrills, which is one of the biggest arcade manufacturers now. And he's going to come and just kind of hang out for the day on Saturday. And you can just walk up and be like, hey, how's it going? And there's so many experiences like that.
And one last tiny question for you before I release you back into your party at Third Street Market Hall. We've been talking about these games, but you go lo-fi. You have tabletop board games as well.
When absolutely.
You talk about bringing people together, it's not all technology. It really is...
Right.
The originals.
Right. What it really comes down to is that you can game over anything. I kind of mentioned before that, like, I think that a lot of the times people that don't think that they're gamers, like, overlook some of the things that you do, whether it's just like how you're walking down the street and if you're like skipping steps or whatever, like that can still be in a way a game. And we have a huge tabletop area. Last year it was 37,000 square feet and we weren't sure if we were going to fill it up, and we filled it up so much that this year it's about 60,000 square feet and we're still spilling out. There's a Magic the Gathering tournament that if you have a ticket, as long as the signups aren't full, you can sign up to be part of that with no additional cost. We're giving away a $4,000 card to the winner. So like, there's tons of different stuff, and like, board games go all the way to, you can just borrow a board game and find out what's going on and sit down with a party and play it. So
that is
everything.
Fantastic. He is Dan Lucen. Celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Midwest Gaming Classic at the Baird Center with Dan and thousands of other recreational gaming friends.
Awesome. Thanks.
What's the best way to find out what's happening?
The best way is to check out our website, which is MidwestGamingClassic.com. If you go on tonight or tomorrow, you can pre-order tickets there. Otherwise, tickets will be available at the door. However, there's a great thing there. You kind of mentioned before that, like, how can you figure it all out? What I always suggest to people is go to our map page, and you can click into each thing and kind of sort and see what's happening at each spot. You'll see the names, and then you can actually click on it and say, like, oh, this is what's happening at this exact spot and who I can meet or what I can play.
Very cool. Thank you so much for being here. He is Dan Lucen, responsible for creating all this fun. Check it out at the Midwest Gaming Classic. This is What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee.